Hello, and thanks for tuning in to What's My Tagline. I'm your host, Carol Flagg. On the show, we put the microphone in front of a variety of industry experts to hear their journeys and learn more about their roles in healthcare marketing, sales, social media, and PR. Along the way, as we hear their stories, we'll glean some insights, ideas, and best practices. You can follow me on Twitter at Carol Flagg and learn more about the show on the program page on healthcarenowradio.com. After a three-month break, I'm back and kicking off my return episode with two of my favorite guests from 2019. I brought them back on together to talk about marketing strategies for healthcare organizations during COVID-19 and what the future might bring post-pandemic. Michael Roberts, my first guest, is the marketing director from Mudbug Media, the engine behind the P3 platform that provides website development, SEO, content marketing, online reputation management, and more for a variety of specialty practices, including orthopedic, spine, and neuro. He also co-hosts the very popular podcast, Paradigm Shift of Healthcare, with the company's president, Scott Zeitzer, and my other guest for today, Jared Johnson. You can learn more about Michael's company at p3practicemarketing.com. My second guest, Jared Johnson, is a noted author, speaker, blogger, consultant, and fellow podcaster. In his 12 years in healthcare, he's launched social media channels, award-winning websites, mobile apps, and other digital platforms with the goal of creating compelling content each and every day. He also hosts another popular podcast, The Healthcare Wrap. You can learn more about Jared's work at alturadigital.com. So Michael, Jared, welcome back to What's My Tagline. I had both of you on as a guest last year, and now we're in 2020 amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. How are you both doing?
Doing very well, thank you.
Yeah, hanging in there, Carol.
Yep. And it's middle of May and states are opening up again. But we have a lot to sort of talk about as you're both experienced marketers and the impact of the pandemic on healthcare marketing. And then I think we'll also touch briefly upon the latest podcasting stats that came out in the Edison Research in March, a topic near and dear to all of our little marketing hearts here. So, but before we do that, as you both know, all of my guests have to share with me, if they had to describe themselves as a tagline, what would it be? And Jared, why don't we start with you?
Oh, Carol, you know, this seems like such a simple, easy question. And I remember last time you asked, I thought, oh, this ought to just like roll off my tongue. And I know that's not the case, but you know, what's interesting as I think like, how do I answer that during the pandemic, which is different than how I did answer it last time we talked. And all I can think of, this is really kind of coming out of nowhere, but I just had a conversation with somebody the other day. And they said, like, one thing, anyway, long story short, I would just say, we got this. Like, that's how I would describe it. I just feel like there's a resurgence of community. It's really, really easy. It all depends on where you're looking, right? It's just as easy to say, like, the world's falling apart and no one's cooperating and nothing's happening. And yet, I see every day people coming together and seeing, you know what? You finally get my perspective. We are coming together and helping on things. I have friends who work for a medical device company that turned around and started making millions of N95 masks, right? I have friends at a mattress company that started making hospital beds, right? I mean, that kind of stuff never happened before, not on this scale. So I just think I'm going to choose to see that side of the world and think, you know what, we got this. Like, things are going to be okay. Not back to normal, but they're going to be okay.
Yeah, really easy to go down onto the dark side of that if you're just reading headline news, right? Versus actually having an experience out in your community. That's a great story. And you and I are both in Arizona. And living, you know, the phase-in process here in our particular state. Michael, you're in New Orleans, obviously impacted, a big impact with the pandemic. So your tagline during these trying times?
I would say that my tagline would be, let's take a moment to think about this. Like, in terms of... I do get the chance to work with a lot of people that are very action-oriented Scott's been on the show before, so you know that.
Yes, Scott Zaitzer.
Always a go get it kind of person. But you know, a lot of the people that we work with as well. So we work with a lot of physicians. We also work with, you know, med tech and pharma as well. And so we hear a lot of tactics come our way. We hear a lot of here's a good next step that we can take. And what I hope to be able to do during all this is talk about it in the broader context of something. You know, how is this impacting the surgeon or the patient or the, you know, helping everybody think through all those different kind of connected pieces with it.
Right. And you both host your own podcast shows, Michael, Paradigm Shift of Healthcare, and Jared, mm-hmm. you have the Healthcare Wrap. And you've focused in on some of these questions, or a lot of these questions, right, related to marketing and working through this as a healthcare provider, a hospital, a physician, a specialty practice, and whatnot. So what kinds of conversations are you having with your clients right now as we are entering, depending on which state you're in and in what area of the country, anywhere from 8 to 12 weeks of this?
Yeah, Jared, do you want to go first?
Michael, you want to take this one?
Yeah, I'll jump in.
This is how we work, Carol. Like this is it. Light. This is it. All right. Michael, you're up.
See how polite this guy is?
Punt. Man. Punt.
Man. Okay, I'm on it. I'm on it. So here we go. So we work with, again, ortho practices, neuro, also with spine, do some in regenerative medicine as well. So we've kind of got like a smattering of different specialties there that we work with. The conversations are radically different depending on which state you're in. And so some of the states that we're working with, they've already been doing surgeries for a while now. Even Louisiana opened back up at the end of April. So all of the orthopedic surgeries, almost all of them, you know, except for trauma and some of that kind of stuff. A lot of that stuff was under this elective surgery bucket, you know, that everything right. kind of fell in. And so, hey, you've got to get back out there. You've got to reassure your patients and you have to direct them to the facility that makes the most sense. So If your only place that you operate in is the hospital, how are you going to communicate how the hospital is taking care of their patients and helping everybody feel safe? And then if you do have an ambulatory surgical center, an ASC available, can you push patients towards that direction? Because so much of the conversation around ASCs before was, hey, it's still as good as a hospital, don't worry. Whereas now the conversation is like, hey, guess what? It's not a hospital. It's okay. So start pushing people away from the space where COVID patients might be, as long as you have the proper testing, as long as you have all those things that you need. So it's definitely some major shifts. And then, you know, the one other thing that I'd throw in there is, and that we're really pushing in conversations right now is, look, a second wave can happen. At any point. Right. And are you as a business prepared for that? And are you able to get the surgeries in that you need for your annual, you know, business needs, your just your income for the year? Because it took such a major hit already. Don't expect that you can just be passive here and that things are going to work out. You've got to be active, you know, in communicating with your patients and really pushing ahead as much as you can.
Jared?
So we're having similar conversations with clients, definitely on the how to communicate with patients, how to communicate with their clients, with their customers. And that's a big one because it's how do we do it consistently and how do we do it because the message keeps changing so quickly. It's not just a campaign or a tagline. It's actual communication and information that people want to know on a consistent basis. So that's really diving into how quickly and efficiently can they communicate with patients. They're also asking how and when do we pivot? So everyone put everything on pause. All campaigns went on pause, right? As the curve was going up. And now as it may start to be flattening out some, you know, I definitely couch that in some cautious optimism. Sure. But as we start looking at this semi-recovery phase, then they're asking, you know, so can we just start doing things, you know, putting the same messages and campaigns back out there into the world? And my very clear answer is nope. Not only does that not even make sense, the timing could be terrible still, but consumers have changed. And so where the things that resonated with us before aren't going to resonate anymore. So we actually need to really start from scratch. And thankfully, a lot of times those conversations have been happening, you know, before now. They've been happening all along. And then I'm trying to help them think about a couple of things in addition, mostly about how they can stay relevant when they can't sell, right? Nobody wants to be sold to right now. And depending on how poorly it's done, it can come off like not even just out of touch, but in really poor taste. And yet things still have to happen. Business still has to move along. And so I don't want them to be ignorant of that. I don't want to say I'm ignoring that completely, but there's this play to be made for being relevant. And a lot of times that does come into play with what used to be called content marketing. I don't even think we call it that anymore. We call it all sorts of other things. I mean, podcasting is part of that, right?
Sure, that's a great point.
Yeah, branding. I mean, it still just used to be associated with blog posts only for like a decade. And now it's podcasts, it's video series, it is emails, it is social media channels. But all, you know, telling that consistent story and providing some value that is very clearly not dependent on you buying something from me, that's the message I'm trying to help, you know, just them get through. And you know, along with that comes the how do you hold on to the goodwill that healthcare organizations have built up? You know, when's the last period that healthcare workers could walk into the grocery store and everyone would turn around and applaud them? Right. Like it's such a unique time. And so we want to recognize not in a bad or manipulative way, like how do we genuinely build on that goodwill and help people remember the good that most healthcare organizations are doing out there in their communities?
Yeah. I think it's so interesting because you're, you know, when you talk about, you know, marketing for, you know, health organizations and providers, you know, whether you're an orthopedic practice or a specialty or a primary care or a hospital of any size, you know, you generally feels it anyway, you know, before pre-COVID, I guess a lot of that, you know, sort of marketing emphasis was on, you know, the experience of the doctors and the reputation, and you know, maybe some of it could have been, you know, cost related, but they were about the procedures, they were about the appointment, they were about these things the activities that a patient has to go through to go to a doctor, get an appointment, get something looked at, get something checked, monitored, potential surgery or, you know, diagnosis, whatever. And now layered on top of that is sort of what you're talking to, which is this sort of reassurance campaign that you're going to walk in and you're also going to be hopefully safe from catching a virus.
Yeah. My daughter is actually a patient on a very regular basis at our local hospital. And I think actually this week is like Crohn's and colitis awareness week or day or something very, very, very close here. So, you know, we just had to deal with going back in for a flare just recently. And as soon as we got on campus, there was messaging every step of the way, whether it was the signs that they had, whether it was the person at the parking garage that asked you why you were there, told you where to go exactly and how you needed to go through the hospital and all that sort of stuff. Like every step of the way, there was communication that clearly guided us. And having gone to that same facility many times now, I can definitely say that I've never had such a clear picture of what I'm supposed to do next and had such a clear understanding of how this appointment and how this, you know, situation is going to go. So I really have to hand it to, you know, a hospital here in New Orleans, the Children's Hospital here in New Orleans, that they really knocked this out of the park. And there was a lot of room for concern, not just because we're going to the hospital in general, but a concern around like, am I more at risk because I'm here? And every step of the way, I understood what our risk was, which was wonderful.
Right. I had a similar experience with a family member recently and felt the same way at the hospital that I was at as well. Jared, so you recently posed this question on LinkedIn, which was, I thought, a great question, which is, Who do you think will fix the way healthcare is marketed and experienced now that COVID-19 has disrupted it? So that was a question that you put out into the LinkedIn sphere, and I'm sure you got some response and perhaps some answers or other questions. So what was behind that question?
Yeah, Carol, that question really came from as I've really just, I probably just think too much, like too much on a certain topic. And I was thinking the other day, like, you know, who's really going to take advantage of the opportunities that are presented here? Because I firmly believe that just as much as the crisis, no one wanted the crisis. Nobody wants any part of it. We all wish it never happened. And yet one way I cope with that is by thinking about what are the opportunities that will help me not even like focus on the bleakness of it, because it is bleak in a lot of different ways, right? Like there's just so much uncertainty. I'd rather not focus on that. I'd rather focus on opportunities. And one of those opportunities is to stop and say, look, healthcare has struggled for so many, well, permanently, but healthcare has struggled for so many years to truly make consumers at the heart of it, to build business models that actually work, to allow them to address consumers and create experiences that actually make sense. And there have been small strides made along the way, but the thought in my head was, okay, well, if we let the same people and the same groups and the same industries create the answers after the pandemic, then we're going to get the same results after the pandemic, right? We're going to have a system that is so impenetrable in some ways and not even open to disruption that it's going to take just as much time for real change to happen. And I'm talking about things that we all ask about, better access, right? Helping make healthcare less scary. Help us understand our bill. Help me know where to go. Help me know the conditions. Help me diagnose a little bit before I have to go to a doctor. Help me, you know, schedule online. So all the things we talk about that are based in consumer-centric healthcare, I just wondered, you know, is it going to be the same people who have made healthcare what it is now? Or is there this opportunity for new people with new ideas who don't even know those old rules to come in and try to pick off little parts of it incrementally and disrupt little parts of it? And that's where I kind of put that out there into the world. And you're right, I got some interesting responses there. I think most people understood, okay, maybe this is just getting me to think about what are those rules that I play by in my section of healthcare? How do I think about it? And what are the frustration points? Is there anything I could... is there anything I've wanted to do and I've just thought, you know, we can't do that because we have to hold on to the legacy way of doing things? Well, guess what? Now there's no legacy way of doing things, right? There's no, there's nothing to hold on to. Our backs are against the wall. We've got to figure out new ways of doing things. So I'm focused on that, like the way that healthcare is marketed and experienced, and those usually come in digital channels. And then that's why I naturally kind of gravitate towards them. But that's where I'm thinking. And I just can't help but wonder what's going to happen over the next 12 to 18 months. What new ideas and new players are going to come around to actually give us some new ideas there?
Michael, what are your thoughts?
It's really fascinating because, you know, all of us in some capacity, you know, we deal with the marketing of it, you know, of healthcare and trying to get that out there. And it seems like so much we're moving past that concept of just marketing, you know, come buy my thing, whatever that was, it, you know, whatever it is that you're selling. And I'm lots of air quotes I'm making on this digital on this digital audio channel that you can't see, but trust me, they're there. But you know, like I worked in the hospitality industry before working in healthcare, and hospitality, and especially in New Orleans back when we were allowed to have tourists, you know, we really focused on this is why you come by this one. This is why you stay at this hotel, why you go to this restaurant. And it's all about that experience. It was so hand in hand. And it seems like so much of what we're trying to get across right now isn't about the come by my thing experience anymore. It's much more about like just that kind of communication. Like, guys, this is what's happening. And it's less, it feels a lot less salesy, you know, if I'm trying to answer Jared's question out of this, is that it's a lot more just about like, here's what's actually happening and here's how things are going and here's how you can feel safe and kind of, you know, hearkening back to our previous question. But, and I do love how much is changing because of all this. You know, part of what we're getting to do on the Paradigm Shift podcast is talking to some different folks that are really introducing new ideas. We had a guy on the show that was talking about how telemedicine's changed, and everybody's talked about it, but one of the things that they're really focusing on is having like primary care physicians be able to consult with specialists in other states, and especially for low income patients that this particular group works with, to be able to get this level of like specialization and consultation that patient would never be able to afford. And right. Especially when you start talking about across state lines kind of stuff, like, come on, you know, that just wasn't possible. And so here's the sort of like clarity of communication that we're trying to make. But as so many new solutions get introduced, there's a ton of new marketing opportunities there as well. And so many people are ready and hungry for these kinds of solutions, and they're not okay with just waiting on the way that the system used to run.
Yeah, if I can brag on Michael for a second, one of my favorite episodes, that was a great one, and it was very recent. Another one of my favorite ones from this entire season of Paradigm Shift was talking about elective surgeries and when does yes. it make sense. And it was Dr. Ira Kirschenbaum out in the Bronx, yeah. the Bronx Care, and then Dr. Vindasa in Louisiana. And it was so cool. Like, I just felt like a fly on the wall. I was like, I just wanted them to keep talking, you know, and debating it. And it wasn't even a debate format. It was just like, you know, hey, what do you think? Yeah, hey, these are things we're considering. These are things we're considering. And it wasn't like yeah. two fully opposite sides of the spectrum. But to hear that conversation like this, just to understand how much effort and thoughtfulness is going into these decisions, I don't think that's something we hear a whole lot in headline news. And that was yeah. it was refreshing to me to like, look, the vast majority of healthcare providers out there do care. They are trying to do this right. There's no playbook for this. They're trying to figure it out. And so that conversation, like, there were so many parts of it that just made me feel, you know, a little better about how things are going. And I think the marketing side of that is, you know, start there. Start with the recognition yeah. that much effort has to go into the conversation. That much has to happen before you even worry about what you're going to market, because you have to figure out what's happening first. Mm.
I think that's interesting that, and I'm glad you brought up telehealth or like, you know, telemedicine. I call it telehealth, but and there are actually differences between the two. But I think it's interesting you bring that up, because obviously that has been obviously a big part of this conversation the last several months, and a lot of people. I see it, you know, a lot of organizations and providers are weaving the, you know, this telehealth option into their marketing messages, their newsletters, their email campaigns and whatnot. And a lot of people, I think, that I've talked to say this is the, you know, the moment. I mean, the idea of telemedicine has been around for decades, but this idea of these, you know, these virtual consultations and doctor, provider, patient, interaction over, you know, hopefully some sort of HIPAA compliant platform, or hopefully we get there, right? But sure. You know, and people saying telehealth is here to stay, that you know, the quote, that this genie's out of the bottle. Do you guys believe that, or do you think, because sometimes, Jared, you actually brought this up, you know, will, you know, things go, you know, once things go back to, quote, some sort of normalcy, and you know, they find a vaccine and we go on our merry way, that things will go back to the norm? Or do you think telehealth really is here to stick? Because I see that as a great marketing opportunity for physicians and hospitals.
I don't know if anyone knows the full answer to that. I do think it's here to stay, maybe not at the volume that it has been over the last 2 to 3 months, right? I've spoken with several friends, some who work at some pretty large health systems, who say they're glad it's there, but they do recognize like the experience is really clunky. You have to go to this website, then you sign up here, then you log in over here, then you get a text, and then you click that, then you go back to the website, and, you know, or you know, you have to log in again. And they're just like, you know what, it's better than nothing. And then I just very recently heard some research on consumer confidence, and in some of the qualitative interviews, like they did some qualitative, this group, they did qualitative and quantitative research. The quantitative research is kind of what you'd expect. Yeah, quite a larger majority of people have had a telemedicine or telehealth visit over the last, you know, compared to whatever it was, you know, a few months ago. So of course, yeah, a lot more people are experiencing it. And yet during their qualitative interviews, they looked at kind of, you know, what the experience was like. And it was more of a, you know, yeah, I did that, but it was kind of meh. It's kind of the way they described it. They're like, I'll probably just go back to my doctor next time in person. You know, this worked this time, but you know, we had to do it that way. So there's definitely room to make up for that. The experience needs a lot of help. I do think we can't go back to the way it was, but so much of that depends on reimbursement rates, right? So
that's
the biggest reason, and from my understanding, of why it hasn't taken off over the last 10 to 12 years anyway. So all those things will come into play. I do think it's going to be around just in a different format. I think we look 2 or 3 years from now and it's going to be more standardized. Those experiences will be a lot more sophisticated and hopefully it's marketed better.
Yeah. I do see too, sort of, you know, there are companies, not I don't want to say rushing to market, but there are companies who have quickly come to market already with products, you know, fill a vacuum, right? Like you said, you know, this just can't be a souped up Zoom meeting, right? You know, it just has to be a little bit more than that.
We certainly had different orthopedic surgeons talk about how limited they are in being able to do these kinds of appointments. Because, you know, look, I can consult and say, yeah, your knee looks like it's in pain, but I can't do any x-rays. I can't do, you know, all the different things I could do within the facility. So there's definitely limitations, but as a family that has a patient here, you know, like being able to do some of my daughter's appointments without having to go into the hospital. And look, even like best case scenario, like the vaccines here and we fully can treat COVID going forward, like the hospital is 30 minutes away on a good day. Mm-hmm. And so if I can save that time and I don't have to do some sort of physical interaction, man, let's do it. Like, there's pluses and minuses for sure, but I'm definitely for it wherever we can.
Well, let's get off COVID for a while and finish out our conversation talking about the annual Infinite Dial Edison research that comes out every single March and has for almost 20 years now. And that Edison research, and listeners, you can Google Infinite Dial Edison research and it'll promptly pull up the information. And it monitors a lot of different things, you know, social media, Facebook, you know, Facebook and Twitter usages, and obviously online streaming, which is radio, which is near and dear to my heart on the streaming side of our Health Canada Radio. But they also talk about podcasts. And again, both of you host very popular podcasts. Jared, you're obviously involved as well in the paradigm shift of healthcare with Michael. So there were some interesting stats, as there always are in this research, related to the growth and usage of podcast listeners. For example, the report shows that at this 2020, 155 million people in the U.S. are podcast listeners. So that's half, right? Half the population of America, right? And that they listen on average over 6 hours and 39 minutes. And on average, they listen to 6 podcasts in a week. So did those numbers surprise you?
They surprised me. I'm surprised that it's gotten up as high as it has for such a large group of people. Like, I remember back when.
But back way I back remember, when. When I was a wee lad.
And I wish I was that young when podcasts came out. But you know, when podcasts really kind of came around for that first like wave of things, and there wasn't like a really good method of getting them onto a device and making them easily accessible in your car and all those fun kinds of things. And I loved them. And everybody I talked to about podcasts was like, you download it from your computer?
You've got to put it somewhere. You got
to
put
it on. Why would you do that? You know, so to, and then to talk with people that are very not tech savvy today, and to hear them talk about their favorite sports podcast or their favorite political podcast or their favorite whatever podcast. And it's like, it is that real. It is that common now for this to happen, which is just incredible.
Yeah, I think that it was in 2017, whatever version of the iPhone that came out that actually had the podcast icon on it, right, as a permanent fixture, and then Google, the Android followed suit. To me, that was, and you can see it in these numbers as you track the growth of podcast listeners, and you track the age and demographic getting older and expanding over the last 5 years. You see 2017 as really a critical year.
Yeah, it really was. It really was, Carol. And I see that too. And it's funny. I bet it was right around that time frame, maybe 2016 or 2017. And I had a very similar conversation to kind of what Michael was describing there. And it was with a colleague, and you know, I was talking about, you know, a couple of podcasts that I liked from other people. And it was mostly because I thought the ideas on those podcasts would be really useful. They would help build the case for some things I was trying to do, right? Some projects, not even necessarily a podcast. I just thought these were really good ideas, and here's an easy way to listen to them. And they just kind of like deadpan and were like, yeah, I don't listen to podcasts, as if it was like no easy way to start doing it. Like there's no interest in it. Like, that's just the thing I don't do. It's like, yeah. Oh, I sent them the link. I'm like, oh, it's really easy. It's right here. And they're like, yeah, I don't do that. I'm like, okay, I'm going to grab the mouse. I'm going to click the link. Like right now, and you're going to start listening, and then you can say, I listen to podcasts. I'm like, it's not that hard. And so the ironic thing is fast forward to today, and that exact same colleague just recently called me up, and they're like, dude, I was just checking out your last episode. And I was like, you were, huh?
Yeah, how'd that happen? The tables had turned. And the research points out too that there doesn't seem to be, you know, as a, like any research, you know, there's the past, there's the present, and then they talk about, you know, their key findings and insights, and, you know, they try to look into that podcast crystal ball. And as some research, they don't see any let up in, I mean, I hear it. When I talk to potential clients, they go, oh, there's an awful lot of podcasts out there, you know, and I can see why they think that, but there's really no let up, and the number of podcasts, you know, pale in comparison to the number of blogs and articles. I mean, pales, right? I mean, when you talk about content consumption, right? So there doesn't seem to be any let up in the interest of podcasts. And I have some theories behind that as to why I think that is, but I'd be curious to know your thoughts.
I was just talking with things out there. Oh, see, sorry. Here we go again. My bad. It's all you, Michael.
All right, mine's quick, I promise. So I was just talking this morning with somebody about a comedian and about a sketch comedy group and how they, you know, tried out for SNL, Saturday Night Live, and it didn't really work out. And they found like a home on Netflix. And in the same way that I see like podcasts kind of growing in the same sort of vein, it's like you can get so particular and so specific with your brand of content, with your type of content. You know, this particular comedian didn't land on SNL because they were too weird, right? Which I don't know if you've watched much of SNL lately. It's pretty weird already. But to be able to, yeah, for sure. But to be able to own that level of weirdness, that level of specific, you know, content, and to really embrace that and create more of that, and seeing that people want that, that's where it feels like podcasts give so many other types of expressions, so many other types of content room to breathe, and it doesn't have to live on a major network, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. Such a good example, Michael. I see things like that a lot as well. I think the number one thing just overall, when if I was facing that same colleague, you know, from a few years ago, I'd say, you know, listen, here's the reason why podcasts are such a big deal. One of the main reasons is that it's passive, right? You can multitask while you listen, so you can do other things. So the feeling of you're still being productive, or I'm mowing the lawn, or I'm on a run, you know, or whatever, you can do that and still consume this content. I think that will just never go away. And I just think as the when podcasts started making that resurgence, it was because of their pervasiveness on mobile devices, on mobile phones, on smartphones. And that's why when they originally came out, I mean, more than a decade ago, there was only so much, there was only limited adoption because there were only so many ways you could listen to it. It was like, yeah, you have to download the file, like you were saying earlier, on my PC or what? And now it's just that much easier to listen. Now you've got CarPlay integrated into cars, right? So you can, it's really easy to listen and consume. And then the other part of it is, you know, just simply look at consumer media behavior, right? We just don't read as much, or we don't read as long or as often in general. And I mean, that's across the board. So we lose attention because, oh, here's a video, I'd rather watch a video, or here's a podcast, I'd rather listen to that than read this entire article. My kids are really smart kids. I don't think they necessarily enjoy reading, but they will watch stuff and they learn and they engage in so many different ways. Like they really learn a lot, and they show me some of the stuff they're learning and it blows my mind. So just that shift, you know, if we're talking really, really high level, like why are podcasts still going to keep being adopted and listened to, and why is that going to grow? Well, there's that, you know, those parts of just basic consumer media behavior that we can take into account.
Yeah, those are all great points. And I think that, you know, when you take content and you put it into that theater experience, you know, podcast or video, right? You know, what you see and what you hear is you're absorbing information in a different way than just skimming something over an article. Well, I think on that note, we're going to be wrapping up our conversation. It was great having you both back on the program again. I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
And I want to thank my audience for tuning in. You can learn more about the show at healthcarenowradio.com. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Carol Flagg or connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, I'm Carol Flagg, and I want to know, what's your tagline?